are live on Rock to Recovery Radio, and I'm your host, Wes Gear. We are on KX93.5 FM, Laguna's only FM, human-crafted radio, and I always start the show off saying, why are we here? Well, we're here to bring hope to a dark situation that the world's facing right now, right? We have addiction taking people we love in huge numbers and mental health issues, and we lose our stars and our idols and our family members, and it just doesn't seem to stop. The numbers are staggering. They're literally, they're staggering. And so I think everybody at this point has been touched by addiction, mental health issues, you know, PTSD, trauma, traumatic brain injuries, something. And so what we feel here at Rock to Recovery Radio, this is a great opportunity to bring the darkness to light. And in sharing our stories, we help each other find hope. But it's not just about talking about the darkness. What we find in recovery is that when we do the things that are required for us to survive, for one, right, and not OD and not kill ourselves, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, we unlock this version of ourselves that we probably have never seen. Maybe never, especially if you're somebody who's been struggling since you're a teenager. Maybe the world has never seen an adult version of you that's beat the demons that are holding you down. And so in so doing, we watch these incredible transformations from hopelessness and despair into what I call the vortex of radness. And my guest this week, super special to me, long, long time friend. It always reminds me, man, I got some cool friends. And his story is just incredible, from not only his recovery from addiction, but also kicking cancer's ass. I mean, Jiminy Christmas, if that isn't like, you know, one, you beat one thing and then you got to take on another thing. And what I was talking about, though, is the issue is that he is just crushing it in his life. He's not, you know, having this dark version of life, like, yeah, I survived addiction, beat cancer, life sucks. It's like, we're just talking. We're just having lunch and getting jacked up on espresso and hearing what he has going on with three kids and touring with the band, et cetera, et cetera. So you guys know I do long setups here. So today on the show, we have a very dear friend of mine. He's not even on the mic yet. Get over here. Yeah, get over here. Yeah, we're recording, man. Okay. Total rock star. Longtime friend of mine who is originally, I knew him from a band called Human Waste Project, which got a record deal. But now he plays with a band I love called She Wants Revenge. This is my homie, Scott Ellis. Welcome to Rock to Recovery Radio.
Thank you.
Yeah. Ooh, you got a good radio voice.
All right.
All right. And I always thank people for making the pilgrimage to Orange County. So
oh, this is no problem for me. I'm from here.
Yeah, you're an OC boy, huh?
From Laguna, Costa Mesa, Laguna, and Huntington.
That's so cool. Yeah. I was thinking about you this morning in the shower, but not like that.
Yeah.
Not like that. Just so you guys at home who are listening know, I remember going to this girl's house who had a crush on, and you were just sleeping there. And then this morning.
It must have been Huntington Beach because it's very incestuous.
Yeah, literally. Yeah. And then I was thinking, I mean, I think they might have been dating, but at the time I didn't even think about it because I was just like, well, I like that girl. And I was like, oh, hey, Scott, what's up? And you're like, hey, what's up, Wes? You were leaving. I was like, the night shift coming in.
Dude, at that place is, I mean, that's one of the reasons I left.
Yeah.
It was like you couldn't date in that scene without,
yeah,
you know, you have to check with your friends. Are any of you guys dating her?
Totally. So when I kiss Heather, am I now kissing you in essence? Yeah.
Oh, but I hope not.
Or worse. Yeah. So, gosh, what year did we meet?
I wouldn't know. I imagine all the record deals are flying around 95. So it had to be before that. It had to be 92, 93 probably.
Yeah.
With all the shows and the Korn shows and the Head shows.
Yeah, you were already the cool guy in town. I came into Huntington later. And so you were playing with Human Waste Project at 5902 with Korn, and Deftones would come down.
Yeah.
Shrinky Dinks.
I love that place.
Ah, it was good.
The best club ever.
We never got to play there. We were a little bit late. We were late to the party. We weren't ready, and then it got shut down.
Yeah.
So I mean, I got to see you play many times. Your band was cool. I had the little red cassette tape.
I remember the first show we did there. It was Sublime, Korn, and Human Waste Project.
I mean, can you believe it?
What a weird lineup, huh?
Yeah.
And I remember Sublime showed up like in the van from playing like a party in like San Diego that day. Yeah. The dog running around. I was like, you guys just played a show?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are the kind of lineups.
Yeah.
We had PE played Avila's El Ranchito with Sublime.
I remember that place.
Yeah. So Sublime is playing on a ceramic tile floor and we opened the show. I'm literally waitress walking by with a thing of tortilla strips.
Order 32.
While you're like, this next song, you're trying to get all deep about the poetry of your music. Hey, can I get some more salsa?
Right, exactly.
That's cool, man. So yeah, I'm glad you're here. Stoked to see you. So what I usually do in the show is kind of ask, it's funny, I've known you for a long time, but I don't really know your story.
Okay.
And so, you know, we always say we don't want to blame our life on our past, but where do you start your story for you? Like, what was your childhood like?
All right. Childhood was down here, a little all over the place. I remember, you know, hanging out with my grandpa, my great-grandfather across the street there, looking at slides I was telling you about this morning.
Well, we're in Laguna Beach now.
We're in Laguna Beach right now. Yeah,
people that don't know. So you said your grandfather actually built the post office.
He did some architecture stuff around here, and I'm like 80% sure that he did that whole building. And if you look at this Shire building right over here, right, that goes through to Glenary, that was where he lived, and he designed that, and it looks exactly the same.
That's cool.
There's some books, you know, from him and his wife, Merle and Mabel Ramsey, they wrote about this town. I learned about it as a kid, you know, looking at pictures of the first school and all this stuff. They moved from Ohio to here. Yeah. And it was like empty. Anyways, moving on. My grandmother lived in Costa Mesa and I was there a lot. And I'd spend time between Costa Mesa and here. And eventually, like more towards high school, junior high, I moved to Huntington Beach.
Cool. What year is that?
Oh, fuck. Excuse me. I don't know. Maybe late 70s.
Whoa. Yeah, so you've been down here forever.
Yeah. I mean, I was born down here. So then, you know, there was a little bit of like, you know, I don't really know my real dad.
Okay.
He left when I was really young.
How young?
My step, 6 months or 9 months old.
Oh, okay.
Something like that.
Never knew.
Yeah, yeah.
He's just gone forever?
I still don't. No, he's alive. I just don't know him.
Yeah. Interesting.
My stepdad came in somewhere around 7 and he's still here. He's a great guy.
So you guys are pretty tight?
Yeah, we're close. And, you know, I had some issues with that as a kid.
Sure.
Dealing with the step parents and stuff like that. And maybe.
How's mom?
Mom's here.
She's good. How's your relationship with her?
It's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I had the same teenager relationship anybody had.
Sure.
You know, I'm going to run away. You know? And then I'd like go out the window and stay the night at a friend's house and just freak my mom out for a while. And then I'd feel bad.
Yeah.
Like, I got to get home and see my mom.
Yeah. You know? But see, I wonder. But see, we say that's sometimes we uncover some stuff. Like, I was like that too. Like, the mentality being, you're going to miss me when I'm gone. You'll see, I'm going away forever. But does everybody do that? I don't know, Scott. Yeah,
some people might mean it. I have little kids and they're doing that to me now.
Like, are they?
When they're mad at me.
Yeah.
I'm going to walk outside. Walk to the edge of the curb, turn back. You know, look at me and I'll be like, I'm right here, buddy.
Yeah.
So I don't know if any of that stuff created what I became, but possibly. I realized through doing my steps, and I'm jumping ahead a bit here, that I realized probably 5 years ago, I never knew that there's a part of me that's like a scared little boy that doesn't know his dad.
Yeah.
And that kind of came up in my steps.
Yeah.
Real late. Like, I mean, I've been sober quite a while. And that was something that I realized, that like I never really tackled the issue of like I'm really hurt.
Yeah. That's great to hear you say that.
Yeah.
And again, you know, I don't necessarily talk about this for blaming it on or anything, but I think sometimes too it's also great for people to connect, to know, oh, I went through that. Or maybe they'll go, oh, maybe I need to dig deeper on that. Yeah.
I didn't know, you know, until my current sponsor had mentioned something about his dad, and I was like, whoa, maybe I'm a little hurt.
Yeah.
Know? And then when you put it in paper, you're like, oh, I'm really hurt.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not that, I don't know why, but there's a kid that feels abandoned, right? So it's just like you're dealing with that. And that's partially probably why I became who I became when I was ugliest, you know?
Yeah. And you know, there's statistics that back that up that, you know, kids that don't have fathers or whatever, you know, whatever parent, it does affect them. And again, we're not playing the blame game. But at the same time, sometimes it signifies work. We have to go deeper and not to go too far off on a tangent. But that's like when we talk about the steps, right? We're talking about fifth step and you say, you know, well, I'm hurt. Let's say that my dad, he wasn't there for me. Right. Okay. It affected this. What's my my part in it? Well, maybe, you know, I didn't look at it from dad's perspective. Maybe he had challenges or whatever. Right. Yeah. But that doesn't get us to go down to what you're talking about. So I love that you say you went there to like, wow, I'm hurt over this. Because that's how we heal.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this affects my relationships with men. That's what that last line says every time. Mm. You know, and you coming up to hug me this morning when we met for coffee first and things like that. Like that hug is a real heavy thing for me.
Wow.
Like, I don't trust men.
Wow.
You know, like, so it's like.
Maybe that's why we were just talking. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
you're helping me here, bro.
It's like, you know, like I just have this thing with men. And like, I don't know why I don't trust them. It's obviously probably that. But like the dude hug is still hard for me. And I do it.
Yeah.
You know, but I'm like, are we going to handshake or hug here? I'm always the guy who sticks his hand out.
Interesting.
And somebody comes out and goes, I'm going to hug you. And I'm like, okay, I'll take this hug, I guess.
Dude, I think you're helping me unlock some more stuff. Right. This is great. I hope I don't have to pay for this.
But yeah, so anyways, cutting back to Huntington Beach. So then we're in Huntington Beach. Are we going into my story now?
Yeah.
Is this what it was like?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's get into it.
Let's get into it.
What it was like. So I was in Huntington. I missed a lot of high school. My mom and my stepdad had some kids. The first little brother of mine, I've got three little brothers. I was 10 years old. So I was no longer a single child. And that affected me too.
Stepbrothers.
Stepbrothers, yeah. And that affected me. It was no longer about me. And, but then I kind of took on this role as kind of like a babysitter.
Yeah.
And I hit the high school and, the first 2 years, I remember the second
Huntington
year.
Beach High?
Ocean View.
Ocean View. Okay.
And I did freshman, sophomore at Ocean View. And I remember a letter from like Ocean View from like, sophomore year. And I think that said I missed 140 days or something.
Dang.
And I just stayed home. Like my dad was a musician.
Oh, okay.
And like he played my stepdad. I call him my dad.
Sure. Sure.
Who's a musician playing in all the local bars, Newport and stuff like that. I remember when one of my brothers was born, I was at the bar. You know, he was
covers or did he had a band?
He did covers.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
He still does it once in a while. But
did he play Perks?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
I was curious.
It was always there's a bar down like that way, Newport. Uh-huh. Like old Irish looking bar right on the PCH there, and I would always drive by it, and I remember that like there's a payphone outside, and my mom called, and they called her back in the payphone.
The
one of my
days.
Brothers was being born. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, we gotta go.
Oh wow.
Yeah. But anyways, I got pretty bad at school. I really fell into punk rock, and I fell under the wing of some older punkers.
Yeah.
Some that were in some gangs, things like that.
Punk gangs.
Yeah.
There was a lot of that in Huntington Beach at the time.
Yeah, and I wanted to be, and they like I was so young they wouldn't let me. They let me like wear their jackets and stuff, and I got almost beat up one day for wearing one of the jackets.
Whoa.
On my way to school. And but that's where I went and stayed that one night, like in this trailer. This punk dude lived in a trailer at the car wash on Beach and Warner. And this guy Tim Potter. And I stayed there and went back to my mom. Like, sorry, you know.
Uh-huh.
But so
what
yeah.
age was that?
That's 14, maybe
14?
15.
Okay, yeah, so you're in
my
high
first
school.
Show was 1984, my first concert was Dead Kennedys in 1984, and this guy Tim took me. And
wow, you saw DK in 84.
Yeah, it's my first concert.
That's cool.
Besides, like going to OC Fair and like laying on the grass and watching Jan and Dean.
Yeah,
which I remember.
Right.
But the first paid concert.
Wow.
Was that? And I smoked something in the van on the way up there. I didn't know what I was smoking. I got into the venue.
Were you smoking cigarettes at the time?
Yes, I was smoking cigarettes and mostly cloves actually.
Right.
It was the '80s. And I used to climb up in trees and just sit there smoking cloves, and I'd get like DeJarm, like cartons.
DeJarm, yeah.
But anyways, I remember they had to carry me into the show. I think I smoked hash. I'm not sure what I smoked. But
who knows?
I got drunk. They carried me into the show. They laid me on some seats. I woke up. Some hot punk rock chick goes, "You want to come with me?" And I was like, "Yeah." And I never forget. Like, I'm standing on the floor of the Olympic Auditorium, and it's kind of empty. And she's like, "I'll be right back." And like, Dead Kennedys came out and the pit started and it came right in at me. And I was like, it was like a setup. I was like,
she did like, that?
Like
no way.
I was like, you bitch. And I'm going to go drink some more then. I remember I passed out again.
Oh, my gosh. She threw you to the wolves. And you passed out again.
Up on the seats, up on the bleachers.
Wow.
But,
wow. Yeah.
And then that's just started me going to Fenders like every weekend. And
yeah. We played Fenders together, I think.
We did?
Yeah.
I don't ever remember playing Fenders.
Fenders Bowl. Oh, no.
You're talking about Long Beach. Ocean View Hotel kind of thing or something.
No, something else. Maybe it'll come to me. It's not my Fenders Ballroom. No, I'm sorry. I can see the flyer.
Yeah, Fenders was done. Yeah.
Anyhow.
So, Huntington Beach, we're all in bands. We're playing around. We all have the dream.
Yeah.
And this is the record deal dream days.
The record deal dream. Got to get a record deal.
Korn kicked it off.
Yeah.
Korn got the big record deal.
So people know, well, we already said that. Yeah, we said that it was 5902, all us bands were playing out there.
5902, Korn, Head PE was very prominent in Huntington. Obviously not at the same moment because you guys didn't do 5902, but yes, you were. And Human Waste Project, Sublime, there's a lot of bands actually.
Yeah.
More. And all of us got record deals.
Yeah.
Which kind of started the snowball effect.
Yeah.
Literal snowball up the nose effect of I actually only drank. I tried cocaine in high school and I did it for like a little bit.
Yeah.
I would break in the backs of people's snug top trucks and go do coke in their car.
In their car? Really? That's the weirdest thing.
I know. I could snap those things open, and that's where I would hide out at.
So if in the, 80s, ever had your
truck? You went to Ocean View, and you got your snug top broken. That was me. I owe you some money.
Yeah, Scott owes you some money. That is a weird thing to
do.
I'm going to break in here and snort coke in somebody else's car.
I didn't
know
where to go. Where are you going to lay it down at?
That's true. When you're young and you're trying to get loaded.
If you do it in the bathroom, it's not going
to
work.
No. When trying to get loaded when you're young, you got to find the place, right? The place to drink, the place to smoke. You're in a bush. A lot of bush smoking for me.
I had a friend who just like shaved some off for me. He was like a dealer dude.
Ugh.
And I did. So I didn't like it. I enjoyed drinking.
And how old were you when you were doing? You were at Ocean View.
That was 15, 16.
Doing cocaine at Ocean View.
Yeah, I'd already started drinking. I started with pot, alcohol, and hash as a kid. And then as soon as I started drinking. I think my stepdad handed me my first beer. I could be wrong, but I think he did.
What age?
Oh God, 14, 15. Just like, okay. You know, have this.
So 14.
And
it just
I didn't like
off.
The taste of it.
Yeah.
But I really liked the effect.
Uh huh.
And a lot of people like the taste. They're like, I knew I liked this, and I was like, I didn't like it, but really liked the way it made me feel.
I hated the taste.
Yeah, it really made me feel good, and I wanted that feeling again.
Yep.
And so I chased it for 15 years, but
So, when you're doing the band dream thing, you're just drinking?
Yeah.
You're just a beer drinking dude?
Pretty much. We'll get to a little
change
there. But as a kid in Huntington, at high school, I learned how to bum change in Spanish with me and this guy, Jeff Shartoff. We would sit on Beach and Slater at the Mexican liquor store and bum quarters in Spanish all day, all night, and just drink Schaefer beer. Schaefer. I used to love it.
I remember
And
Schaefer.
Then we'd get snops once in a while, which would knock me on my butt.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, and I just, you know, sometimes sit on rooftops of carports in Huntington and drink and just fall asleep. I remember sleeping nights out there sometimes. Just like,
wow.
Like my mom knew I was nearby, like I was hanging out with neighbors or whatever, and I was just passed out somewhere.
Sounds like your mom was, let's say, pretty chill. She wasn't uptight. She wasn't worried. Like my mom would freak out.
They
like,
made me check in every hour. I had to call them.
So 4 in the morning,
I was never really, I would get back by midnight or 1 or whatever it was,
gotcha.
But I had to call them every hour. I remember that.
Which means payphone.
Yeah.
Ding, ding.
Or a house or whatever.
A house, yeah.
And I would, you know, you act like you're not drunk or whatever it is. I remember when they moved to, after sophomore year, they moved up to Cypress and I was up there with them. And I remember coming home really wasted. I'll never forget coming home really wasted one night. And she goes, have you been drinking? I was like, no, not at all. And I walked straight into a wall and knocked myself out. And then I woke up the next day, and she was cool. She didn't say anything.
How do you walk into a wall and knock yourself out?
I you know, I was supposed to make a right when I go in the house, and I went straight into the wall.
I mean, how fast were you walking? I mean, that's hysterical.
I think I was just wasted.
Didn't take much.
It didn't take much, no.
To put you, I'll just stay down here, Mom.
So, yeah. So, cut to the, you know, I drank every day, much like everyone else.
What age?
From 15 on.
In the day?
No, I was never really the day drinker.
Okay, night you're drinking at 15. Yeah. That's considerable. I didn't.
You got to find it, you know.
Yeah.
It's not free for kids.
No.
So you got to find it, steal a little bit from the parents, that, things like that, you know, fill it back up with water. And all those fun things and friends who have drinks and drugs. And I never really bought drugs, even in the band days.
Yeah.
Like I really thought that that made me the, this is a weird way to think, but I thought that that made me the addict if I paid for it.
Sure.
So I never ever bought drugs. But if drugs were there, I would do them.
Yeah.
You hand me a pill, hand me whatever, you know, acid, whatever it is. And,
that was a line you had. We have all sorts of lines, right? I won't drink in the morning. I'll only drink if I'm at a party. We make up these things that if I do this, then I don't have a problem.
Then I don't have a problem. Yeah. Right. And I knew I had an alcohol problem. I knew at a young age that I like this and this is an issue, but I'm enjoying it. This is fun to me.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to stop doing this. And I'm not a drug addict because I'm not paying for it.
Yeah.
And I'm not necessarily an alcoholic because I woke up with a hangover and I went to school or work or whatever it is that I did for 15 years. And then I didn't drink until 8 p.m. or whatever it was, you know.
Now you got through high school okay, and then you're doing...
Oh, I dropped out.
You dropped out?
Yeah, I dropped out.
I didn't know that.
I went up to North Orange County with my parents when they moved. And I went to a school called John F. Kennedy. And I think halfway through the year, they put me in a continuation school for being antisocial.
I can't imagine that. You're such a nice guy. You do kind of look...
I was very, very resentful that I got, you know, that I had to change high schools and things like that. And so I went to this continuation school, and I just drew... I got, like, credit for every math and whatever by drawing art. Huh. I don't know how I got
through
that.
They just get you through.
Yeah, they just get me through.
That's kind of
like,
how
they're
I graduated.
Like, you know what, kid? You should probably go to this class and study for the GED, which I did. And I dropped out, but I did take the GED. I have no idea where it's at, but I passed it.
Yeah, and then you went to Harvard from there.
No. Then I just got jobs, random jobs, and I had screen printing jobs and things like that, and I'd be out till 3 in the morning at 5, 9, or 2, and those disco nights that they used to have. And I would go to work at, I think, 6 in the morning. I'd work 6 to 3, and I would just go to work. I don't even remember it. I would go to work wasted and then come home and sleep and do it again.
Yeah.
And just odd jobs all over and play music, do odd jobs.
You can do that stuff when you're young.
Yeah.
I remember going, staying out all night. I finally got with this girl I'd trying to get for months. I got 1 hour sleep, still drunk, went to the office.
Yeah.
Put on my tie.
Yeah. Fake it till you make it.
Totally.
Make it till you fake it.
Hopefully. Yeah. Let's put in a song now. We decided we're going to play some old Human Waste Project.
Okay.
Which was how I got to know you. Super cool band with your singer, Amy. She was rad. And Jeff Shartoff.
Jeff Shartoff, Amy Echo, and Mike Tempesta.
Mike, and then John Tempesta plays for the Cult.
Uh-huh. And John Tempesta was the one who took me under his wing, got me all my endorsements. Basically ran me around town getting me endorsements. Tama, awesome. Zildjian, have today.
That's awesome. It's all coming together.
They're just two New York boys who grew up like teching for Anthrax.
That's awesome.
And we got signed and we're partying away and we did the record, the same place Coin did the record out of Indigo Ranch up in Malibu. Yeah. And
so what song are we going to play?
Oh yeah, we're going to play the first song from that record, which is called Disease.
Nice.
Which Dis-ease. Is appropriate. Disease.
Yeah.
Dis-ease.
Yeah.
There is one cuss word towards the end that I'll have to edit out.
Okay.
But yes, it's an appropriate song and it's manic enough for how crazy I was at that time.
Cool. Love it. So this is Rock to Recovery Radio. We're here with former Human Waste Project drummer Scott Ellis and current She Wants Revenge drummer. And this is KX93.5 FM. This is Human Waste Project doing Disease.
Without apology, without apology.
Oh, man. I remember those good old days playing clubs with you guys. It's fun. I still can't remember that one in Long Beach, though. We played, Deftones played there, you guys, us.
I remember a big one where Korn headlined it.
Well, that was Seaport Ballroom.
Seaport Ballroom, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
So I got to announce us back in. This is KX93.5 FM, Rock to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Wes Geer, and we're here with She Wants Revenge drummer Scott Ellis, and that was his former band, Human Waste Project. Brought to you by our friends at New Vista Behavioral Health. So you were telling the story of you got your GED through high school, you're a big drinker since 14, 15.
Yeah.
And but you didn't buy drugs, so therefore you didn't have a problem. And you were doing a bunch of jobs. Mm-hmm. And then so where does the progression go to where it gets really bad, you're getting repercussions, and then you want to get sober?
Yeah, so we got signed. We went around, you know, started touring Europe.
Human Waste Project.
Yeah, we got signed. Like, everybody got signed and went on tour and did the buses and the Europe things. And we were in New York at Irving Plaza. Mm-hmm. I was just there recently, and I looked at the table that I did cocaine off of when this guy, an LD for another band, we were on tour with somebody, and he was like, "Hey, man, you don't look good." And I had just gotten really, really bad the night before. And I was a mess, drinking mess. Every day I was a mess. And to be honest, I think I had scabies.
Oh.
I was a real mess. I was spreading.
That was going around in Hinda Beach, I want to let you know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I probably disgusting. Got it. I probably got it there and took it on the road with me, most likely.
Yeah.
But I had that, and I was just a real bad mess. And he was like, "Do this bump," and I was like, "Really? I don't like that stuff. I remember trying that," and I was like, "Okay, fine." And I felt great. I did the show, and I started looking for it every night.
Was it coke or meth?
It was coke. Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. It was coke. And so he would give me some every night right before the show. And I was pretty good about never getting too drunk before the show. I'd start drinking right before the show. I had some nights where I was a little off.
Yeah.
But then after the show, it was on.
It was on.
And that went for 3 years.
Wow.
And it got to, like, you know, touring and then getting dropped and coming home and still and being in a new band, but still being on, like, kind of a salary type thing and having, like, going to a photo shoot and having the new manager go, "Hey, don't drink tomorrow. I mean, tonight, you know, because you have a photo shoot tomorrow." And I wouldn't listen.
And that's a statement when somebody's telling you not to drink the night before because it's going to screw you up the next day.
Yeah, they know.
Yeah.
They know you're a wreck, kind of. They can't stop you. Yeah. You're unstoppable. and I kind of knew. I was approaching 30, and I knew that, okay, we're going to cut to the end here. I'm looking for cocaine every night. I drink first.
Right.
I tried doing cocaine without alcohol one night, and I was like,
horrible.
That was disgusting.
Yeah.
And I was at a barbecue. Somebody handed me a bump. I did it, and I had to go to the bathroom like you do on cocaine. And I looked around. I was like, I don't want to. Everyone's here. So I jumped in the car, ran home, tried to get my key in the door, and pooped my pants before I got in the door.
Yes.
Incomprehensible demoralization.
Yeah.
More than that, there was every night was in.
You coke pooped.
Yeah.
Your pants.
Yeah.
This is what I love about this show, because we've been friends a long time, but I get to know people intimately, and I love it.
I did so much embarrassing stuff. I remember coming down to Huntington one night, and the bar was closing. It was one of those above, like, second-story bars right on the PCH in Maine. And I just came down for one night right at the end there, and I started cleaning up the bar. They called last call, and I started drinking everything.
Oh.
And there was GHB in one of the drinks.
Oh, man.
And I woke up at someone's house I didn't know. I had pissed myself. They had wrote all over my. I got one at the time. I had one arm tattooed, so they wrote all over the other arm. And I just woke up. I was like, "This is so embarrassing."
That's worse than the poop story.
Yeah, it was really embarrassing. And I had to ask some dude who's sitting there playing video games, so I don't know. I'm like, "Can you drive me home? Like, in my peed pants? Can I sit in your car? You know?"
Ah, man,
it was bad. But it just gave me, like, a little heart flutter. Like,
I couldn't
those
talk.
Those days, man.
I just said that.
Yeah, it's heavy.
Take it in. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, the last couple weeks, I was just home. I was renting an apartment. And, I'd flown to Ireland.
Mm-hmm.
And I left early.
Are you Irish?
No. Well, I am, yeah.
Yeah.
But I went out there with a girl.
Uh-huh.
And I left a little early. I partied with Joe Strummer all night one night.
Whoa.
And I barely remember it. I remember just looking at him, but I was in a blackout. It was all night.
Do you know what happened?
We stayed up talking all night, standing in one spot.
Wow.
Some guy would come by and hand him, like, a brandy, you know, and like maybe a spliff or something. I don't know what he was doing. And I was running to the bathroom doing bumps and drinking. And I left early. I was like, I can't handle this place. And I left early.
Couldn't handle Ireland?
They drank a lot. Yeah. And so I came home.
You couldn't handle it or you ran out of Coke?
A little bit of both.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I came home and I was stealing from the roommate, stealing liquor. I was keeping warm beer in my room that I wouldn't share with him, but I was stealing from him out of like his vodka out of the freezer. And a friend of mine that was playing in the new band I was in was in the
house. What band was that?
It was called The Start.
I remember that. And yeah, this guy Jeff, still with Amy.
Yeah. This guy Jeff was playing bass. And I offered him a beer and he was like, no, no thanks. And I was like, wait, come on, we drink. Like me and him chased girls for months.
Yeah.
And
was that Shartoff?
No, this guy Jeff Yeager.
Oh, okay. That sounds familiar.
He surprised me. He was like, no, I stopped recently. And I was like, I want to talk to you. And came in my room.
Yeah.
I told him and I was like, dude, I've been in this room every night in a blackout. I wake up next to the phone book. I'm looking at Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm trying to ask for help, but I never make the call.
Whoa.
And I'm throwing up blood.
Whoa.
And I'm in bad shape and I don't know what to do. And he was like, I'll take you to a meeting if you want to go. And I'm like, I want to go. And
what year is this? How old are you?
This is 2000. Because I knew I wanted to get sober in 2000. I had already passed into 2000. It was July 2000. Mm-hmm. And he called me the next day. I made up some excuse. I went out again.
Of course.
And he called me the day after. I made up some excuse, and I went out to a party downtown. And
was it in the back of your head? Like, was it kind of ruined by then?
Yeah. No, I knew I was done, and it was, and things were bad. And the only person who was kind of loving me, everybody kind of wrote me off, and I owed everybody money.
Yeah,
I was in a bad spot. But the only person who kind of loved me unconditionally was this guy Dan Shartoff. He would still loan me his truck and stuff. Damn. I don't know why. He cared, I guess, you know.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he'd carry me out of bars and things like that, throw me in the back of his truck.
Uh-huh.
And I went to a party downtown in his truck that he loaned me again. Woke up in like...
which is kind of stupid of him, but...
Westchester or something like that.
Yeah.
Next to some girl who just was... I didn't sleep with her. I wasn't that much of a mess. She would just kick me out. As soon as I woke up, she kicked me out. She was just like being a person who let me stay somewhere.
Yeah.
So I wasn't on the street. I looked forever for like 2 hours for his car. Finally found it. Went home and called this guy, Jeff. And he took me to a meeting that night. And the best part is he took me to Rodeo Drive. And I was like, oh, you're kidding me. You know? And there's this famous Friday night meeting on Rodeo. He takes me to Rodeo. And one of my childhood punk rock idols is a speaker. I won't name names.
Sure.
And then this guy who's like notorious for being a waste case, like just a sad... like always in trouble,
from
alcohol and drugs, took a year of cake.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the heck? Like, what are the odds that if these two guys can do it, we're both known for being a mess, then I can do it.
And that's kind of why Rocked Recovery Radio is here.
Yeah.
Kind of show, further spread that message of you can be, quote, cool, whatever that is, right?
Right.
And be sober and have an incredible life. That's one of the things that I, you know, like you're dying, right? Inside spiritually or whatever, energetically and physically, your body's breaking down, your life's crumbling, and you're like, but sobriety's gonna suck. It's like, dude, or chick.
Yeah.
I remember this sucks.
I remember Sponsy once told me, he was like, I can't picture myself getting married and not like toasting and drinking champagne.
That's what I told
my mom.
That's
what you're worried about right
now? Yeah. Yeah. When I was going to rehab and my mom is sober. I don't know if she made me get mad now, but anyhow, I said, but mom, what if I get married? And I'm never in even a relationship.
There's a lot of what ifs.
Yeah. What if I can't toast champagne? It's like, dude, you don't have a girlfriend.
Let's not worry about that just yet.
No, that's the first time I heard, just take it one day at a time.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, that's what that means.
Yeah. So yeah, he took me to a meeting and I've stayed. It's been 18 years.
Congratulations.
I'll still sit in the back. I'm not the guy who... I've had my moments going up front.
Yeah.
But...
meaning talking, sharing more and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, at 5 years, I still hated sharing. So I actually forced myself to go to a meeting that was close to my house that had round robin sharing. And I had to get comfortable with it. And I finally had to get off my hands.
Yeah.
And do it. And and I fell in love with the meeting. And it still scares me to this day when a share comes my way.
Yeah.
But I can do it.
It's kind of like public speaking. I get it. I enjoy it.
It's really scary.
It's really scary. Yeah.
It is. I mean, if you're not like a forward person, sharing is terrifying. You're like, what if I put my foot in my mouth? What if I say the wrong thing?
Right.
It doesn't matter. Everyone just, we all have the same problem.
Well, and think about what we're talking about. We're not giving like we're not going on TV news or giving a speech to our whatever, you know, to Harvard or something like that.
Right.
You're talking to a bunch of drunks and drug addicts, which by the way, probably before you was some guy talking about Lord knows what.
Yeah. And there's a timer who's going to shut you off in 2 minutes anyways, right?
Yeah, yeah. All you got to do is tell your truth. But I get it. We get afraid. We get afraid. We get afraid to be judged by our peers. It's very normal.
Yeah, it's scary. It's scary being new.
Yeah.
You know, it's scary when I had that first sponsor say, you know, go outside and shake hands. You know, stop leaving early.
Oh, and yeah, like, you know, that's dangerous.
I was asked to go and just say hello to people. It was hard.
It's hard.
I did it, and it worked. It helps. I made friends out of that.
Yeah.
But
I had the same thing. I was very scared to talk to people, and I kind of was starting to get enough awareness of like my brain would judge people. That guy's lame. Oh, look at him. Because I was insecure. Yeah. So then I played this trick with myself. Like, okay, next time your brain says that, you're going to go say hi to that guy. And every guy I would do that, they'd always be the coolest guy. Like, oh, you play guitar and collect Les Paul and you know what I mean? Or, oh, you're a stunt pilot. Not even that it's about that, but I would always be surprised.
Yeah.
That they're actually great people.
Contrary action. That's what you're doing.
And they had the eyes of judgment. Yeah. And then, like you said, you make friends. That's cool. So let's do our next song.
Okay.
All right. What is it?
This song is not necessarily about sobriety, but we'll get to it next. But I took on cancer recently, and I've got three little kids, and one of them is obsessed with Tom Petty. So I'm going to cry. Hang on. Mm. So I took him to Tom Petty.
Nice.
To see Tom Petty, and I bought him a Fender guitar through Mike Tempesta.
Aha.
And he plays an acoustic guitar. He's four now, but he got this at three. And he would sing while I was going through cancer.
Your son would sing.
My three-year-old, he was three then, would sing I Won't Back Down every day. And it became my mantra for cancer. And
did he know?
It turned out to be Tom Petty's last concert. He died 2 days later.
Wow.
So his first concert was Tom Petty's last, and he doesn't know. No, I mean,
Tom's gone.
No, we actually just started talking about it recently, and he keeps asking me, why did he die? It's pretty heavy. But anyway, so I Won't Back Down by Tom Petty is, I wore a Tom Petty shirt to my chemo treatments.
Incredible.
It just kind of became my thing to get me through, to help me, you know, as I'm almost welling up here.
Good. Yeah. Feel it, man. Yeah. And, those mantras are so powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I love you, bro. You guys can't see it, but, you know, we're having an emotional moment here in the studio.
We're hugging right now.
Yeah, man. I love this guy so much. He's his neatest dude. So this is Rock to Recovery Radio. We're here with Scott Ellis of She Wants Revenge, and this is I Won't Back Down, Scott's Beat Cancer Mantra from Tom Petty.
Turned around, and I'll keep this world from dragging.
Tom Petty, what an incredible talent. This is Rock to Recovery Radio. I am your host, Wes Geer, here with my dear friend, super rad human, talented guy, She Wants Revenge drummer, Scott Ellis. And he was telling us his story through addiction and, you know, dropping out of high school and having problems with drugs and alcohol and touring with Human Waste Project. And then you were telling the story where you finally broke down and had your friend take you to a meeting. You saw some legendary people, shall we say, that were having success in sobriety, which can be mind-blowing. Yeah. And then how long sober were you when you got diagnosed with cancer?
I was 17 years sober, so because it was last year.
Last year.
Yeah.
And so we played Tom Petty because that was your three-year-old son's the song he would always sing to you.
Yes.
And that was your mantra. I won't back down.
I feel like he knew.
Yeah. The intuition.
I mean, I believe he knew.
Yeah.
You know, but
on an intuitive level, almost maybe more than like a whatever conscious level. And then you were telling me, you were going to tell me in the break when you wore the Tom Petty shirt every day in chemo.
I wore the Tom Petty shirt through most, unless it was dirty.
Yeah.
I bought a Tom Petty shirt and I'm going to hand it down to them. And I bought a couple actually. And I would wear it to the first treatment of the two a month that I did. And and then I would drop, like I'd go to chemo. My wife would go with me. And the next day I would act normal. I'd drop them off at school. It just made me really tired.
Yeah.
I'd go back to sleep after and stuff. But I'd walk them to school and then come back and just start crying after I dropped them off for fear of losing them or whatever, you know. Like,
yeah.
And what's funny about the whole thing is nobody ever said I was going to die. But every time I dropped them off at school, I'd start crying and be like, I'm going to die. No one ever said I was going to die. It's so funny where your mind goes, you know.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to die. It's obviously possible for me to die if I hadn't treated it, maybe.
Yeah.
And I still could, you know, but today I'm here.
Yeah. You know? Thank God. What was it like when you got diagnosed with cancer? Did you just freak the F out?
I kind of knew it was coming. I think, you know, we got Google and all that stuff, and they were sending me in to get my lymph nodes cut out. And,
yeah.
You know, just to be sure. And
you were on tour with She Wants
I was on tour. Well, yeah, we just do like weekend warrior type stuff.
Yep.
And I'm the tour manager and the drummer, and I tour manage other bands this way. And I, you know, I was feeling these lumps, and I'd come in, and I'd go get like, come home, I'd go get like an ultrasound. And, like, I have these lumps on my neck, and I had one clinic tell me that, oh, it's just probably a cyst.
Yeah.
Let us know if it doesn't go in like 6 months. So I actually waited 6 months and it was still there. And I was like, this doesn't feel right.
You know what?
And these
I just
guys
don't
would be in
like
the back
that.
Of the car listening to me make these calls and these trucks that we rent and stuff and be like, are you all right? And I'd be like, I think so.
Wait mm-hmm. 6 months. That just sounds negligent.
I think it was pretty negligent. Yeah.
Yeah. I had a scare and it was probably nothing. And the guy's like, yeah, come back in a couple months. I'm like, no. You know, wait, you told me come back when your insurance kicks in. I'm like, no, I'm not waiting 2 months. I'll pay the thousand bucks to know now,
right?
And get on top of it. It was nothing, but I mean, yeah. So that's
I've done that a lot. I've went to the doctor going, I think I have cancer, like many
funny,
times. And they're like, you have. I know it's not funny,
but I can.
I did do that. Like I'd be like, there's a lump, you know, and they'd be like, that sir is a cyst, and I'm like, okay.
Prior too.
Way prior.
So, but you could kind of feel that there was something like you just did not
this
feel right.
This felt off. This felt off. And as they were going into the we need to cut out a lymph node out of your neck. And then I'd wake up from them cutting it out and they'd be like, we took two. Mm. And I'd have this scar. For the longest time, it felt weird to bend my neck. And after that weekend of having them cut out, the doctor's like, you know, you mentioned that you were afraid of lymphoma. I wanted to let you have your weekend, but I want to tell you that that's what it is. And I was like, don't let me have my weekend. I was actually mad that he let me
yeah.
I get what he did. I got kids and he was being considerate, but that was my heart sank, you know,
I can imagine.
And I didn't know how to tell my wife, you know, that was heavy.
Heavy.
How do you tell your wife that you have cancer?
Yeah.
You know?
And does he tell you at that moment what the odds are?
They sent me down the hall immediately, which freaked me out. Like, but I've already set an appointment at a cancer doctor down the hall.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is bad. And I go in there and I waited an hour to talk to this guy and he told me that they want to do these bone marrow, like, I don't know, all kinds of stuff that scared me. Both doctors, by the way, first thing they said to me was stop eating meat.
Interesting. Which makes me happy.
Yeah. They didn't say like chicken. They were like, what are you eating? They asked me about my diets. And I was like, I don't really eat much red meat.
Yeah.
Like, okay. I'm like the occasional burger, you know? And they were like, okay, stop red meat and eat a little chicken or whatever. And so I left that doctor and went to another doctor. I set an appointment from that doctor at a Beverly Hills doctor that my friends had gone to and everybody seemed really happy with. And I went
for
over
for cancer?
There. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a place called Tower. And I went over there and I mean, this is kind of, I don't know if this is pathetic or sad or funny, but I walked in, I waited an hour with one and I walked into this one and I smelt espresso and they called my name. Hmm. Now, you know, I like espresso.
You love espresso.
And
you thought it was a sign?
They were calling my name when I walked in. I was like, I don't even have to wait. And so I was like, this is a sign. I called my wife and I'm like, honey, they called my name and there was coffee.
And she's like, that's
I'm like,
good,
I want to go here. Because you have to choose kind of where you want to get
treated. Oh, got you.
At. And it's a little farther away. Like, I live in Glendale.
And, so it's a sign,
it was a sign. So I did it. And it was great. And that same doctor was like, what do you eat? You know, he's like, you're never really going to know what gave you cancer. He's like, but it's, you know, it's either hereditary, environment, or food. You know, it could be many things. And I kind of immediately thought, I was like, well, like, it's probably for me. It's probably food.
Yeah.
And I started listening to podcasts and stuff.
Okay.
And I listened to this guy, Rich Roll, mm-hmm. who was like an ultra marathon runner, and he's plant-based. And I read his book a long time ago, and I just started like, I was walking through the chemo treatments. I couldn't run anymore. I had no energy, and I'd walk 3 miles a day still because the doctor was like, if you're going to feel like crap.
Yeah.
And the best thing you could do is exercise.
Huh.
So when I started to feel like crap, I just started walking.
Was that just so tough?
It was pretty hard, but it did work. Uh-huh. It gives you more energy.
Gotcha.
And I would just listen to podcasts, and I fell in love with. I started listening to all this guy's podcasts, and he had all these doctors on and stuff. Mm. And I'm not here to make people stop eating meat or dairy or anything, but I heard some podcasts that were like, I'm not going to have milk anymore because of what I just listened to.
Yeah. You know?
And so I just decided I'd do, prior to starting treatment, I decided to go plant-based for 30 days, and the lumps went down. I'd say 80% before I got my first chemo and the nurse practitioners were kind of tripping on it. They were like, where are the lumps? And I'm like, I'm not saying it's gone.
Yeah.
And I got kids. So I really still want to do chemo.
Yeah.
If I didn't have kids, I might've not done it.
Wow. And just saw where the food based diet took.
I mean, I was doing the hardcore,
the plant-based.
No sugar, you know, everything. Now I eat a little sugar.
Yeah, I think he's had a cinnamon roll and a quad espresso.
I did have a quad espresso.
See?
Yeah.
And for us sober guys, that's a party right there.
Oh, yeah.
some sugar and some coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
Dude, I'm so happy. So what would,
how are we in time?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know anything. But I'm just so happy you're here sharing your story. I'm so happy that you're here as a human and made it through for your family and everything. And then I guess what I want to know is, for you, what do you think is key to like staying strong through the early times of sobriety and the time when you're fighting cancer? What would you share with people at home about that?
For the early times of sobriety, I mean, it's about showing up, you know, against your own will. Because I'm a recluse. I'm at 18 years sober. I'm still happiest sitting on the couch on the internet.
Oh, me
I'm
too.
Still trying to finish the internet.
Yeah.
I just can't do it. But
oh, that's a good one.
But
I might have to steal it.
I think I got it from a TV commercial years ago.
Still trying to finish the internet.
Honey, I'm trying to finish the internet. Leave me alone. I mean, I'm really happy alone on the couch on the internet.
And me too.
I'm a tour manager, so I'm constantly booking and trying to save people money and get them to fly the most luxury they can or whatever. And so I really like obsess on that. Mm. It's my alcoholic obsession is what that is. Mm-hmm. And I'm so happy to be an alcoholic. Like I don't want it the other way.
Yeah.
I want this story.
Why?
Because it's that obsession has helped me become who I am and the worker. I was always a good worker mm-hmm. because I have this, I attribute it to this disease. Like you lock in on something.
It's true.
If you lock in on the guy across the room who's dealing the cocaine, I'm going to get the cocaine. Okay. If I lock in on this flight that I wanted a certain right, I'm going to watch it and I'm going to get it at the right price. And I just, it's all part of my alcoholism.
Yeah.
That's who I am.
Super focused. We watch that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not ashamed of being an alcoholic. I love it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't have it any other way. I think that I actually wish that normies had just some kind of 12-step.
Oh, God, yeah.
And just something, you know, like, just it doesn't have to be for drugs or alcohol. And I know there's a 12-step for literally everything. Now, for cell phone addiction. But, like, it's like I just wish that everybody would go
and
get a little reprieve of some kind and check themselves like we do.
Yeah.
Well, when we do. Hopefully. I don't always check myself, but when I do. And I'm actually grateful for cancer.
And
that's
how so?
That's weird to say. I got past it, so I'm mad. I told you earlier, I'm mad for the people we've lost from cancer.
Sure.
And if I was my wife and I had passed away from cancer, I would be mad.
Right.
But I'm grateful for the experience that it gave me. It cleaned up my diet. It made me more grateful. So much more grateful than I thought I was grateful. I was running around doing the, I'm grateful for, you know, I'm at a meeting and I'm sharing and I get picked and it's like, I don't know what to say. I'll say I'm grateful for being sober today.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I've done that a million times and like, it really, I really mean it now.
God,
like,
I hope I could be gone tomorrow.
I could be gone tomorrow.
We all could.
Life is so valuable. And as you get older, it's like, it's just trippy to me that like, I don't want to be a jerk to anyone anymore. Like I've been a jerk a lot.
Yeah.
Especially using. I don't want to leave that kind of thing behind. I just want to be dad, be a friend, and be a worker, you know, and my gratitude is, it's pretty big right now.
It's pretty big right now.
Yeah. It's been less than a year. So I'm feeling the cloud of, you know, I got through this and I'm smiling like crazy at, you know, every time I see my kids. That I get to be here with them. I'm taking one to Knott's Berry Farm. My 2-year-old is turning 2, obviously, on a Sunday. And I went to Knott's Berry Farm as a kid, and we're going to take him to Knott's Berry Farm. Because what do you do with a 2-year-old? Like,
I don't know. Yeah. I don't have one, but I'm sure you're a great dad. Yeah, I could out there.
Somewhere. No, I mean, like, you might someday. Like,
I'm not ruling it out.
Yeah.
Dude, I love it. And thank you for sharing your experience, your strength and hope and coming down here. What an incredible story. You are light. And so this has been Rock to Recovery Radio. I'm your host, Wes Geer. We've been here talking to the amazing, remarkable human cancer survivor, sober dude, drummer of She Wants Revenge, Scott Ellis. So if you're out there feeling like you have no hope, remember there's always a way out. Just ask for help. There's answers there for you. You're worth it. So until next time, we're out of here.